It's Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 99 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Luke.
My name is John.
And my name is Matt.
And we have temporarily banned our two remote hosts from the show.
See, fools.
Because we need to get them compressors.
Join us.
For those of you who are not familiar with what compressors are, they're little recording devices. Well, they're not recording devices, but they're sound devices that cancel out background noise. For example, the persistent hum that we keep getting generating their voice and I keep having to try to remove, which makes them sound like they're talking into coffee cans.
Didn't you pick up some EVPs in the last episode with Chris?
I did. His house is extremely haunted.
I think that was his wife.
I have some acquaintances who had a daughter, and they had one of the books, you know, the dog says woof, the cow says moo, and at the end is a house. There's just a picture of a house with everything in it. And so it didn't have any words.
The house says, I'll drag your souls to hell.
the house says that.
Dude,
yeah.
Matt, you're destroying the audio.
They taught it to go, what's the house say? Get out! I thought that was hot.
So I'm going to get them some compressors, but that doesn't matter anyway, because the next episode coming up is episode 100. Two things at episode 100. First of all, if you have any questions for us or things you'd like to talk about, consider this sort of an open forum. Please send those questions to me or Luke as quickly as you can. And secondly, because of the fact that we're going to try and videotape this episode, then get video editing done, that episode is probably going to take 2 weeks to produce. So there may be a week where we don't put anything out and DLI gets to go back above us on iTunes again.
Briefly.
So,
for however briefly that happens for.
We'll give them one sucker punch on us.
Oh, they were talking. Chris called into the show when I listened in. They talked about us for a while, and the pseudo rivalry had, even though they never respond to anything we do until months afterwards.
They did say they were going to finally take us up on our beer and chicken wings challenge.
Possibly. We have to drive all the way to Rolla, though, which I don't really want to do.
That's 45 minutes. It's not
45
that far.
Minutes to Rolla?
Dude,
yeah. That.
It's like, no, well, it's an hour and a half.
Yeah. How
actually,
fast
a little bit more
driving?
From
how
St.
slow
Peter's.
Do you drive?
Actually,
you
I drive about the speed limit. Actually, I don't about speed.
Wow,
limit.
What a
dude! you're gonna edit that.
Even if you're exceeding the speed limit by a significant amount, you're not going to do it under an hour.
Yeah, I mean, there's going 80, and then there's going 160, and that's what it would take.
All right, well, fine.
Yeah, but they were talking it up like they're. Like
it's still worth it though. I've already picked out who our drinker is going to be. I need to figure out who our eater is going to be.
I better be the friggin' drinker.
Actually, I was thinking about Chad.
Chad's not even on the show.
He was.
I don't know if he counts.
I don't know.
I don't think he counts.
That's a man that can drink anybody under a table if he really wants to. He usually yaks all over the place thereafter, but he is still standing unto the end. And if we yak in somebody else's establishment, you know, that's not really our problem.
Fear the Boot is here.
You know, if it was sweet girly drinks, I could take the stand, but...
DLA really does not want to start a pissing contest with us. I don't know what they're getting into here, because they should know better at this point.
Two convention announcements coming up. First of all, DICON at the end of May, very start of June. It's a convention here in St. Louis if you're interested in gaming, or which I hope you are listening to the show. But particularly if you're interested in a
Wait, DICON's in St. Louis?
Well, Collinsville.
Yeah. Metro area.
Same place Archon.
Yeah.
Okay, all right,
so it's the St. Louis area.
This is the first time I've listened to announcements in like 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, also, if you're into War Machine, they're going to have a hardcore tournament in there, which is a little different than hardcore porn. And
wait a minute, those actually. War Machine guys still,
trust
at
me.
Fear the Con were softcore?
Yes.
Trust me, if at hardcore, you still get effed, so it's not that different from
right.
porn.
So if you're interested in that, then definitely be sure to check that out. Matt, you had one for us?
Yes, not too far in the future, Memorial Day, final Divers Region big convention for Living Greyhawk goes down. That's a weekend in Divers, it's in Kansas City.
Yeah, I heard that about her. I heard she goes down because she's dirty. Cause it's
and she's a big diver.
Divers is a dirty, dirty city, Luke.
It really is. I found that out during play, but are you guys going to have like a dirge or like light a boat on fire?
No, but there is going to be a 3-round grand finale interactive that's going to be just battle-licious.
Is there going to be beer?
Wait, grand finale, is that because Living Greyhawk's ending in favor of Living Forgotten Realms?
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the campaign is...
Wait, Living Forgotten Realms?
Yeah, that's what's next.
Oh,
yeah.
That's cool.
It's odd the Living Greyhawk dies kind of near the time Gary Gygax does. They didn't really put that together. I wonder if that's a sign, like a bad omen for 4th edition.
I think 4th edition's got plenty of bad omens as
Greyhawk
it is.
Greyhawk was Gygax, though. That was his baby.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, with the end of the official support for the campaign, they're wrapping up all the storylines. So it's big finales all over. for all the different regions. But Divers is like one of the better regions, you know.
I had that experience. I wonder what I still have my stuff when I was down in Paranland from Australia. I wonder what they're going to wrap up, because I didn't get any storyline down there. I wasn't down there long enough.
Oh, you could always go back down and check.
Yeah, I wonder if we could just pop on down, like Living Forgotten Realms people, and run events and stuff.
I want to do Sembia, because in my second edition Forgotten Realms box set, that was one of the regions they swore they were never going to develop, so it was up to you to invent how you care it to. And of course, they didn't stick to that. But nonetheless, they did promise that. And so I put a lot of work into developing my own Sembia and all these storylines surrounding it. And I would love to run my own living Sembia. And of course, it would have no bearing whatsoever and no resemblance whatsoever to the existing fiction, because damn it, they told me they were never going to develop it.
Look, I've got...
I'm just going to get angry and angry.
Well, actually, I have a joke here, but I also have something real about that. Okay. One, the joke is that why don't you just send it to WotC along with your Transformer stuff, because I'm sure they're willing to take a look at it and publish you immediately. Second is...
I'm going to just piss across the table.
I will drink it. Just drink it right up. I'll drink your milkshake. Bring it. The...
Whoa.
Wow. Wow, that went a little deep. Boom.
I hope not.
Yeah, I didn't actually mean that. The second thing is, dude, if you want to run your Living Sembia campaign, we have a con now. The thing you need for Living Games is a convention. You could do Living Sembia next year as much as you wanted. You could do anything you wanted. You could do Living LARPers of Shadowhawk. Whatever you want.
Yeah, but once a year, yeah, it's like, kind of hard. Like Christmas and mud sex.
Mud sex?
What?
You gotta, yeah.
I don't understand.
Does everybody get a present at Christmas?
Your mud wives?
Yeah, me and my mud wives. What are you going to do? You have a big convention once a year for the mud, and everyone... Okay, maybe not.
Well, no, speak on. I hear story.
Well, anyway, with the once a year thing, yeah, I mean, it'd be very limited, but you could do it over the course of a number of years. Or if it got big enough, I guess it could run at other cons, but, you know, it's Living Sembia, so who's going to play it?
Yeah.
Well, I'll play Living Sembia.
As long as you don't run into any copyright issues with WotC, I mean, nobody ever... gets in trouble for
I'll
that.
Be busy.
Oh no, nobody ever gets in trouble for copyright
living
issues. Or IP issues on the internet. Never.
No, never.
Our first topic for today comes from Dan from Saskatchewan, Canada, who wrote in, and he had a great question in our last episode, or one of our more recent episodes. For me, this whole thing occurs in a time lag, because there's the released episode and the edited episode. So last episode could be any one of about two or three shows for me. But one of the more recent ones, we talked about playing races, and we talked about a variety of sci-fi and fantasy races. But one thing we didn't talk about that he brought up, and actually I'm ashamed of myself for not bringing it up because I have a lot of thoughts on the topic, is role-playing a robot. Let's take, for example, the one where I've seen this most often, it's certainly not limited to this, is the guy who wants to play the droid in Star Wars.
Right.
And
I had that guy in the last game.
I've had that droid guy several times.
Well, it could be that.
That's a little more tough to deal with.
That's a lot
more. The astromech kid.
Yeah. Ugh. Usually what I get is someone who wants to play the combat droid of some kind.
Yeah, it's always the assassin droid.
HK-47.
You want to play HK, yeah. Exactly.
You used to want to play IG-88, but now you want to play HK-47.
I don't know what an HK-47 is, so...
You didn't play Knights of the Old Republic?
No.
Seriously?
You need to play it.
No, I've not.
It's excellent.
You can get it for... It emulates on your 360. Right. Pick it up. It's worth it.
Yeah, I've been told that by a lot of people. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. So.
HK is this, like, C-3PO if he was pathologically violent.
Cool.
It's very, very good.
Pathologically? I like that idea. That would have made for a much better character
in the
movies.
He's a pretty cool droid to play.
All right.
Much less lame than C-3PO.
Yeah.
Question number one that I think you've got to deal with if you're going to allow robots in your game is... What is a robot? I realize that question sounds so stupid, but here's the types of things you have to work through. Do robots have personality? If they don't have personality, how do you play something that's just mechanical, purely programmatic, that it takes an input A and will always respond with output B, no matter what the context or of this whole situation is?
Well, I think for any robot that you're playing, you have to assume that they have some level of AI. And an AI won't necessarily always respond with the same output, with the same input.
I don't think
it'll take other situational parameters into account.
Well, but I don't think you do have to assume that, because I have had people playing games where they played a robot and they did not have some kind of sentient, self-aware artificial intelligence. They were simply operating off of a limited set of parameters, like my function is to guard the party.
Guess what?
Or my function is to translate languages or handle economic deal.
How much then more complicated is the wizard's function than to do damage?
Well, I mean, you're talking about a...
It looks like you're killing a trooper. Would you like help?
Oh, I get it. Clippy.
Yeah, Clippy.
Okay.
All right.
I'm in the Facebook group.
I'm shooting to an old crowd there, so go on, Luke.
I was saying that that sounds like a freak show character or a joke character. Because it's like the person who wants to play the astromech droid or the robot who has very limited function. It's like playing the barbarian that can only say six words only, less fun.
You know what? Some people have a crap load of fun with that astromech droid, and they want to be doing nothing else, and they leave the gaming session the happiest person at the table.
Then more power to them. If they're not bringing the game down,
they didn't bring the game down at all.
Well, excellent.
My comment all freak show characters, I said it back on the freak show character episode, and I'll say it again, is my answer is not no, but it's a really hard sell.
Yeah.
If somebody comes to me and says, well, I want to play the Deep Space Scavenger, I'd say, okay, you know, give me a personality and a background. Assume there's nothing outrageous. We'll go with that. If someone came to me and said, I want to play a robot, red flag right there. If they then go on to say, I want to play a robot who just has a very narrow set of programs he runs, this would be like, okay, sit down. We need to talk. Convince me.
Yeah.
Sell me on how this is not going to wreck my game or wreck your game experience, after which you wreck my game because you're bored. Or because you're agitated, or because you're confined, or because the three wizards that you have built into you don't have anything to do with the situation you're in right now.
Well, I think basically if you're going to have a character come in like that, the first thing you have to do is sit down and define what all the guy can do and make sure that it actually fits your campaign.
Yeah, you have to Frankenstein the character sheet pretty hard when the guy can calculate calculus at like a jillion teraflops a second.
That was going to be the second thing I get to after personality is power level.
Yeah.
Because that's a whole new set of issues.
You don't feel, you don't have injuries, just lose body
parts.
You're
immune to practically everything.
You're immortal.
That which can blow up metal.
Right. But before we get into power, just kind of finishing off these thoughts on exactly what a robot is, you've got to ask yourself, does the robot have personality? Is the robot self-aware? Does the robot feel emotion? And if so, how far does that go? Because you can get, you can have some kind of funny comedy situations where the robot falls in love with an organic being or something like that. It can also quickly get very cheesy.
Dragon Ball Z.
It can also get very cheesy and very stupid. Anyone who watched Star Trek: The Next Generation, you know there are some shows where Data's kind of feeling out his humanity that are actually kind of interesting, and there's a whole lot of them where it's just complete crap.
Yeah, it's just a gag.
Yeah.
It's funny as hell in Nemesis or First Contact or whatever, when the Borg Queen is like, so how long has it been? And he goes down to the nanosecond or whatever he does. It has a value.
Yeah, engineers exactly. Do the exact same thing. I wouldn't worry about it.
Power level. This is obviously a big one because the power level of a robot is very vast and very imbalanced.
Well, it all depends on how you want to set it up. I mean, if the robot is basically just a human with metal skin, if he's no stronger, no faster, he just has a high memory, you know.
Okay, and maybe you can balance it out. We talked in the racial episode about doing the plus one, minus one to get sort of a zero-sum character.
Which most systems allow for.
Right, so you could maybe do it with a robot. It'd just be really, really extreme.
Would you do it with a robot?
But
if it was a hot robot.
If it was Daryl Hannah in 1982.
Aw, yeah.
You're talking about that as much as I talk about Savage Worlds. That's come out twice.
I don't know if...
Ain't nothing wrong with a little Blade Runner or Splash.
I absolutely would have done Daryl Hannah as you appeared in Blade Runner. So, yes, Luke, there's your answer.
I have a terrible admission. I've seen Blade Runner, but it's been so long, I remember virtually nothing
about
it.
You know, I've actually only seen parts of it, but... We'll let John.
And you've never seen the Blues Brothers either, have you? That's you, right?
I've seen most of it. I've never seen the whole thing.
Haven't seen the Blues Brothers. Watch the Blues Brothers, man.
All right. Well, when we were in Chicago Midway, they had a lot of Blues Brothers memorabilia stuff everywhere.
I passed the Little House of Blues kiosk again when I was going on my trip last weekend.
You know, eventually we're going to have to put together a list of movies that you must see if you're going to maintain your geek
cred. I have had a movie night. I'm trying to get together with this group forever.
You've never tried. You just mentioned it.
Yeah,
every time
I'm like, well, let's do it Friday. I can't come Friday. And then you've got some lame eye doctor excuse about why you can't come.
You've got to plan it in advance.
All right. Well, anyway.
My schedule goes way up, baby.
The problem with doing the plus one, minus one on the robot is it can get too extreme. You can get to the point where you are min-maxing, for lack of a better term, a robot.
Well, that's why I didn't even do it. I didn't take the baseline stats for a regular player character when I sat down with this R2 droid. I just said, hey, look at this. You can't do combat. Also, you can't fail when you're trying to think math, or you have these languages you can do, you will succeed when you astrogate. There's no question.
And something like that's not so bad because it has utility purpose, but it's not game imbalancing. But more often than not, what I see someone who wants to play the combat droid, so suddenly it's like, well, I am the combat droid with no personality, so here's the ultimate. I get a plus 20 to strength, a plus 20 to constitution, a plus 20 to dexterity. I've got ion cannons and blaster cannons, but, you know, I'm not sociable and people don't really like me in public. Yeah.
Well, who says you have to be a good robot? You could be a crappy robot.
Yeah, there are plenty of crappy robots out there, and or robots that are basically men with maybe a little bit more armor than a regular human.
Right, and this goes back to the sell me on it. And that's one of the first things I'd look at.
We're not exclusively talking about Star Wars droids.
Right. Right.
I just had a great idea for a campaign setting. Ice Pirates. That had robots in it. Comedy, time travel. You don't know Ice Pirates?
John, you said we don't have to do Star Wars robots. Let's do the other famous one. Data out of Star Trek Next Generation.
Okay.
All right. He's a great character within the context of the show. He is a completely ridiculous character for role-playing
game. I completely agree.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because he is good at absolutely everything. And no one should be allowed to play a robot like that because they will dominate the game.
The only balancer I could turn that around with would be if everyone else in the game either had tons of money, which doesn't exist in Star Trek, so that's out, or were just flag officer admirals all the way up the line, and
but
this guy was
then,
an ensign.
Yeah.
But what
even
about, then, he'd be super
what about
proud.
You're all flag admiral ensigns, or what, you know, you're all on a ship, but turns out one of you is a Cylon, but you don't know which one.
Well, that's cool.
Then, yeah, you have a cheesy plot device.
Then you play all along the Watchtower to find out.
Yes, but you must play a very bad version.
Yeah, what is that new version?
Let's stop now. This is a spoiler-free show. Somebody's gonna get pissed.
We're not spoiling anything. We're just complaining.
Guys,
that's totally different.
They cover Hendrix covering Bob Dylan in Battlestar Galactica.
And just so you know,
we got Dawson here.
That broke my suspension of disbelief, and that I dislike season three after the airdrop, which was awesome and one of the best things on the show.
Mm-hmm.
The trial was good, and then that crap comes out at the end. Fortunately, they've redeemed it in season four. They started out good, but at the end of season three, I was like, wow, what have they done with my show? Robots. They're robots in that show.
So, one way you can handle that is they're just people, and they resurrect sometimes.
And when they have sex, their spine glows.
Yes, for no particular reason.
I would probably not emphasize that with most of the gaming groups that I run
with. Actually, it's like the eyes on the Centurions.
I know, but there's something luminescent on the spine that they can't find in a medical exam. Explain that one to me.
Well, it's only
they can receive orders remotely, yet there's nothing different about
their medical exam. Medical is useless when the guy who's administering it is lying.
Yeah, there's
that was
too.
The genetic test. When they did general body scans of them, they could not find any difference with them
because
physiologically.
Because it's all biomechanical. It's straight out of Shadowrun.
Well, right, but you'd still have separate organs and separate tissues. I mean, there's nothing luminescent in my spine.
I just want to jump. I want to jump into a hot tub with a hybrid. Just kick back with a bottle of wine.
I want to jump into a hot tub with Six and Boomer.
Well, that's the easy answer.
All right.
You know, the hybrids.
That's the right
wrong
answer.
Kinds of robots, because these robots basically are people, except with glowing spines.
Robots are people!
So,
are robots people? Is there this AI sort of social backlash?
Statistically, it doesn't matter.
So we've talked about two things. We've talked about, first of all, defining what a robot is in terms of, you know, how human are they mentally. We've talked about balancing them power-wise, which I think, once again, you need to really sell this to the game master. And game masters, let me give you a fair warning. If somebody says, I'm going to play this ridiculously powerful robot, and their balancer is an RP restriction,
They
will either never do it, or they will find a way around it, or they will find a way to make it irrelevant, or who knows what. The RP balancer for a power, the mechanical power, and I don't mean robot mechanical, I mean like character sheet power, is a stupid idea that never works. Don't ever, ever believe a player who's trying to sell
that
to you.
Here's the other thing, is that if someone wants to play a robot that's basically a human, just robotic, you have a really good reason for that, because you're looking for bonuses for being mechanical, you know, what have you. I mean, they're good.
You could play a Blade Runner and not get any bonuses.
Or you could get no bonus.
If you were some of the robots.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, kind of going back to the different AI outlooks type things, just because you had a limited parameter that you could act within doesn't necessarily mean you're a monotone, low vocabulary guy. Maybe you're more like from the movie AI, the Jude Law character, who's just a gigolo everywhere he goes.
Or the dude from Aliens.
A good example that I can think of that
Bishop,
in Mass Effect. They had the difference between AIs and VIs, artificial intelligences and virtual intelligence.
The Geth are a fantastic villain, by the way.
Where the artificial intelligence is basically a mechanical organic being, that you have complete consciousness and complete freedom of thought, as opposed to a VI, where there's boundaries. It's kind of boxed in.
It's just an expert system.
But it can still react to context and situation, but it's not self-aware. It's not conscious. It's not, you know, I actually think those are kind of bad words to use. I think conscious works well, but self-aware, anything that can run diagnostics is self-aware.
Sentient.
Sentient is even worse, because sentient means capable of senses. Protozoans are sentient.
Right.
You know, people use sentient to mean conscious, and that's...
Well, I think
Simurgh did it.
They're indivisible in modern parlance.
Yeah, they are. They shouldn't be. If you actually look up their proper traditional meaning in a dictionary, sentient simply means capable of sensing. So it always drove me batty when I heard that. But anyway, that's a huge tangent.
Bach. The Dan Repperger Dictionary Hour.
Social acceptance. This is another one. How well are robots accepted socially? When your party of three guys and a robot walks into the bar, and the
we
robot...
We don't serve your kind.
I was
here.
Waiting for yeah. it. I was
there it
just
was.
And the robot's
it.
Not playing a subservient role. The robot's acting like he's one of the guys. How are people going to handle that? And is that going to screw up your
holograms.
Game? Is it going to become tedious to where that character walks into town and can't accomplish anything?
Well, this is an age-old problem in fantasy. I want to be the orc.
Yeah, the gnoll or the kobold.
I'm the outsider. I can't go into town because I'll be ostracized. Well, the entire campaign was going to be in town. We talked about this!
I guess that goes back to that whole group template.
Yeah. Which people... Yep. And we know what happens to the group template. One person breaks it, and it all goes downhill from there.
Then the DM breaks them.
Yeah. Or just quits and says, somebody else runs something. I'm done.
You know, something I saw that was great, and for the life of me, I cannot think which edition of Star Wars this was in, but in one of the many iterations of the Star Wars RPG, playing a robot had its own character creation system. You did not roll up a character and then pick, like, the robot feet, and then that got him additional stuff. You actually started with, okay, here's my base chassis. And based on that chassis, you could plug in different systems, and each of these systems had pluses and minuses.
You can do that in Saga. I don't know if they have a completely separate droid track creator set up at the beginning, but you can make a droid PC out of parts.
But, you know, I liked that for two reasons. One, because of the fact that it allowed you to balance robots as robots. You didn't have to try and pigeonhole robot creation into organic human creation. And secondly, because of the fact that it gave it really its own distinct feel.
So it basically puts it into the character creation matrix where, like, if you choose to be a robot, you're giving up some amount of skills, money.
It's not even that, because, see, that's what I think is difficult, because it's hard to take a human and then plus and minus them to a robot. It's a lot easier to say, you know what, building a robot is a completely different set of events than a human or an alien growing up, having life experiences, learning skills, building muscle mass, whatever, and then coming out as the character you're playing. And I liked how it was like you start with a raw chassis, and they were able to tweak that just right so that you weren't giving up human things to become a robot. You were making choices between robot things. That if I want to put on the speed mod, then I don't have room for the intelligence mod. And there was some danger of min-maxing there, but if the rules are written well, and you really test these out with that one power gamer everyone knows, then you can pretty quickly find where the holes are and say, okay, you know, I need to tone this down or not allow maybe that this big gun is so big that you can't also fit the shield generator on here at the same time because it's too much draw on your power generator.
Look, you're talking about a point by system. There's going to be a min-maxer. It doesn't fail. You know, if you've got choices.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, everybody min-maxes in point by. That's why point by is communism. Never do point by.
Point by is communism.
Back that up.
Point by sucks. There's no character to point
by.
The
only thing I don't like about point by, and you know what? Do you guys have anything more on robots?
No.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and just roll right into point by. The one thing that bothers me about point by is the fact that you can, and let me change that to most people will make the exact same character every time.
I've not found that.
The nice thing is it's fair. Every character is equal.
Fair my butt.
But
Robert Heinlein, all men are created unequal.
But hey, look, I'm not disagreeing with you philosophically. When Adam and I were making the skies of glass rules, or were dorking around with them back on the big board months ago, one of the things that we were trying to decide is, are all people equal? And with the conclusion we came to is, you know, morally and spiritually, or however you want to put it, good old Declaration of Independence, we believe that all people may have an equal value. But we start coming up with this, like, you know what? This guy is strong, attractive, wealthy, intelligent. And this person over here is none of the above. And without coming up with some kind of really vague sort of, oh, we love everybody, people are equal. But that's not the point here. I don't even know why I went into that.
The point is, in role-playing games, people assume that strong people are dumb and smart people are weak.
Exactly.
And in reality, maybe, maybe not.
Well, but if you're on a point, you don't have to be.
It can be.
Well, but I think, of course, in a role-playing game, you almost have to do that for the sake of fairness.
Yeah,
but,
game balance.
And that's where Point By succeeds, because of the fact that if you're playing a Point By system, everyone has a total of 10 attribute points, no more, no less, as opposed to rolling 3d6 for each attribute, where one guy could roll straight 18s and one guy could roll straight 3s.
And they've done that.
There's just, we think we've all been there, done that, or at least.
I love how every version of D&D is like, hey, if you roll a couple of threes, that's just a role-playing opportunity. Now you can play the guy who's weak. But everything
Which
else
is true
in the system,
until you roll a three.
Yeah, everything else in the system punishes you for having that three. It's like, well, I can't do anything now.
Consider
it's not
the half-orc. You can't get any dumber if you stick that three in intelligence. It says that in one of the
I agree with you, Luke, though, that they try to play it up as it's a role-playing opportunity or a reward of some kind.
But then the game's
but then they
no way
nothing to
yeah,
reward
no
that
way
in any
helps
way,
that
shape,
out.
Or form. So, you know, with Point By, I have a really mixed feeling, because I think for the sake of a game simulation, it's a great way of being fair. But my real concern is, and I saw this, and this was really bad in MechWarrior 2nd Edition, where everyone made the exact same character every time. It was partially because it was easy. It was partially because everyone fell into the rut. But it was also because if you didn't make your character this one way, you couldn't function. That if you did not take attributes, then skills, then advantages, and spin them each a certain way, then you rolled out onto the field with this ridiculous gunnery and piloting skill. And by ridiculous, I mean horrible.
Well, dude, now you're talking about system, though. I mean, you can get systems where the Point By is not well balanced, or the choices there are extremely suboptimal choices, as opposed to most systems, especially the ones who've been around for a long time, like, for instance, GURPS, where all that's been kind of factored out. Not everything, but
it's
most
been mathematically prepared, but it's still no fun.
Random character generation, where they're rolling attributes or generating everything random, like, it's a Warhammer Fantasy, Marvel superheroes, can can be a ton of fun. But if depending on the game you're playing, if you're playing a fun, goofy superheroes game, roll it up randomly, it's a great time in Marvel superheroes. If the GM has something specific they want to do, and you want a certain character in that setting, then what's wrong with making it?
You tell me you've never had a gaming group with that guy or those guys who always play the exact same character, and the point by system enables them to do that.
I've actually found it worse in random generators where, like, D&D, okay, Dwarf 1 died, now here's his brother, Dwarf the 2nd.
But in a Point By, it's not just Dwarf the 2nd, it is the exact same dwarf.
I found in Point By, I've played a lot of Point By, and I find the opposite. If somebody's character dies, they tend to make something completely opposite and different from that character to start out with. Now, you know, this is just anecdotal. I mean, everybody's had their experiences. I'm sure people do make the same characters again and again.
Some people tend to fall into the same rut with doing a similar type of characters. Other people bounce all around the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean,
the thing with Point By is it gives everybody an equal starting point. They have an opportunity for equality. But then it all depends on how well do you know the system, how much are you willing to put the role-playing aspect ahead
of
Point
By as a utopian fever dream.
Well, you know, and
not communism.
Hold on. That's what Matt just brought up, and I don't want to give the wrong impression, is the reason why I like Point By. Because the Point By, like I said, I have a very 50-50 opinion. The positive 50% is just that, the fact that it allows fairness. But, of course, the debate this always comes down to, and we talked about this in the design series, is every role-playing game system has to make a decision between accuracy and fairness. Real life is not fair.
Rolling a damn dice for every single thing any of your characters going to do for its whole career is not fair. How could you complain that these rolls at the beginning are any different than every attack roll you're going to make?
Let's take a D20 system. If you think you can record the rolls of a single individual over the course of an entire campaign, and it will work out to a perfect 10.5 average, it's just not going to.
That's a very, very long campaign.
Yeah. It's an extremely unlikely campaign, a series of die rolls.
We had to stop right in the middle of session 16.5 because we're equal.
Because you can take people out there, and I'd start naming names, but you people listening mostly don't know the people that I know, so especially those that are not involved in the podcast. But I could name people for you that have everything going for them, and I could name people that have nothing going for them. And once again, in the spiritual moral sense, I believe that both of these people are equal and deserve equal protection, equal love, equal etc., etc. But on a character sheet, this you could not get these guys both out of a point by system, because one would go over and one would go way under. And
well, look, here's what it boils down to. When you're translating that into a game system, the game is a tool with which we interact with the setting.
Right.
And because the way numbers work, if you have somebody who's very suboptimal and everything, they are not going to do as well or be as fun as somebody who at least has one thing, if not many things, are decent or very good at.
Well, you can re-roll if you get a total crap roll all the way down the line, man. I mean, I'm not saying that you're crucified by these sixes and fours that you rolled for every single one of your stats.
Well, let me make some generalizations here, and I realize that there's going to be nuance and depth to everyone's opinion.
Drink.
All right, but if I'm not...
Cheers.
Is everyone doing cider today? No, we have two beers here at the table. We also have these great Rice Krispie treats. It turns out the grocery store we went to is selling these huge, like...
I can't even fit in my mouth.
I know, I can't either. I keep tearing pieces off it. But we have these great Rice Krispie treats.
Unhinge that jaw.
All right. I'm going to get some, like, Lord Voldemort tongue going here.
But it sounds like, generally, in the decision between balance and realism, that, Luke, you fall kind of on the fairness or balance side. Would that be generally accurate? Not 100%, but generally accurate.
Since the system is a tool I'm using, I would like it to be balanced so everybody has fairness.
Okay.
Realism is only appropriate when it doesn't take away from the game.
Okay, Matt, am I correct that you'd fall in the same camp?
Basically, here's the way I look at it. With a point buy, you should have no horrible characters. But with a random generation system, you have an opportunity for truly excellent and execrable characters.
Well, and on that point, with the point buy system, if you want to have a fatal flaw or something you aren't good at and make that integral to your character, you can't.
You can't get anything lower than an 8.
All right. Well, hold on. John, we'll get to you in a minute here, because we haven't let you really strongly defend your point yet. So I'll get to you in a sec. I am, as I said before, kind of riding the fence on this one, because I like realism in games. And as I said, real life isn't fair. But at the same time, I realize that within the game, it's not always enjoyable to be on the receiving end of the unfair stick. So it's very hard to, I found, for example, in D&D, if I use random rolling for the stats instead of a point by system, which I normally do, what I typically end up doing is telling people to roll too high or too low to either fudge their numbers or re-roll them anyway, because people want to play competitive characters. So I'm really on the fence on this one. Now, John, you're the person here who seems to fall strongly on the other side.
Yes.
Of life isn't fair, and neither should the game be.
I don't even care about life.
All right, well,
game is a simulation wherein we make these spot interesting decisions about these ridiculous circumstances. And part of the fun is that we can't control it all. If we could control it all, we wouldn't need a system, or we could go write a book.
So would you say that part of the attraction to you of this is the potential even for your own suffering?
I think when you eliminate the possibility for a poor outcome in any aspect of the game, then you eliminate equally the victory or thrill of getting a positive outcome.
But what if you can design the poor outcome? I take points away from this so I can put it in something else. It's my fatal flaw.
Well, then you get yelled at later when you fail.
Ah, it's your own stupid fault for doing that.
That's true. My earlier point was that, at least in a lot of point buy systems, the baseline stat isn't very low at all. Now, of course, you could change that.
I don't know.
I've seen it all over the place.
I don't want to design the flaw. I don't want to design the obstacle. I want the obstacle to just jump out of the road and smack me across the cheek.
And I've been in that camp too. I mean, I love the occasional random character generation because you come up with some really fun stuff and unexpected stuff. But I don't like it all the time. I don't like it with every campaign. It depends what I'm playing, and it depends on the GM.
Well, and I think part of this comes down to sort of an unrealized philosophical difference, which is, does the simulation begin after character creation Or does the simulation include character creation?
Are you playing Traveler?
Well,
are you playing Hole?
It, but not Traveler.
Right. Let's, for a moment, let's take religious views out of the picture. None of us got to pick what we were born as.
But we were talking about religion for this whole podcast.
He's the point.
Religion of point by versus random rolls.
I'm trying to take out of the picture certain religions that would say that we did pick how we were born, where we were born, all that stuff. So just for the sake of simple discussion here.
Nobody would have assumed that had you not brought it up.
So my mind's deeper than yours. But the point being here that...
Mine's so broad and wide.
The suit is so tight.
It's like laughing to have
Nobody got to pick what they were born as. And I think there's not a person listening to this podcast who's honest with themselves who can't say that when they look in the mirror or when they look at themselves, there isn't something they'd like to change. And I guess kind of what we're debating around here without saying is... Just like when you roll that die to see if you succeed or fail at shooting, you can't control the outcome. Should the same be true with effectively who you were born as? That you can't control who you were born as or what you were born with any more than you can control whether that gun hits.
Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay is the game that actually talks about that. Like, you can't choose what you're born as. So here, randomly create and randomly generate your first profession because that's what you were born into. And then you can go from there.
I think that's cool. Now, I wouldn't do it every single time, not that far.
No, you already said you would. It's too late. You're committed.
I'm frowning, but you can't see the frown on the microphone.
One of the ways that I'm thinking about trying to get around this when we start writing down the tier two rules for Skies of Glass is that, or actually this is a tier three rule, that with Skies of Glass, we're going to do life paths where you knock out blocks of your life, say, okay, at this point in my life, I was living on a farm but going to a school. At this point in my life, I ran away and joined the army or whatever. And you get to pick all of those except the first one because you can't pick how you were born. You were born into a certain circumstance, then you can start making choices about your life. But by that point, you know, you still have been born with some kind of a base starting point. You have tons of opportunity to modify.
You're combining the two. It's impossible. Communism and capitalism can never interact.
But chocolate and peanut butter can.
Oh, delicious.
So can chocolate and beer. But that's
Watch Metropolis.
John, do you have anything more you want to say on your point? Because it seems like the other side's gotten a lot more airtime here.
I started
to say something, but I forgot what it was. You summarized a lot of my points in your little Danicture there. The randomness for me starts before the characters even get out of the starting block. I have fun rolling up a bunch of numbers and then assigning them as best I can. And I don't necessarily like to run games where everyone is equal.
And, you know, I have to at least say you're very consistent and very believable in that. Because having watched the kinds of games that you like to play, not even just role-playing games, but video games and such, you very much gravitate towards the hardcore PvP, permadeath, rob each other's corpses. You love the Hard Knocks games.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I grew up on Ultima Online before UO Renaissance, man.
Right.
I grew up on Legend of Freaking Zelda, and you grew up on Ultima Online.
Because I'm 5 years younger than you
are. If we weren't brothers in spirit,
the Ultima
would be insurmountable.
If there were other
little Link 10-year-olds walking around in Legend of Zelda, I would have killed them and ignored Ganon.
I'm going to take your Triforce.
10 years later, they don't drop their rupees anymore when they die, and I don't care.
I will have to say it's at least consistent in that, because a lot of people I know that will say they like the Hard Knock sort of games, they like the permadeath, they like that you've got to roll up your character and you could roll low. For the most part, all they want to do is make other people suffer.
Oh, no. This perspective comes from getting my butt kicked now, trying to kill liches for gold by other PKs.
In John's case, I will have to say he's consistent. Because I know in particular, like in World of Warcraft, all the people are screaming for permadeath. Everyone's like, look, there's a simple solution. When you die, delete your character. And of course, the real issue, so that's not the issue. The issue is they want to permakill everybody else.
Right.
And so it's like, no, there's no consistency to that. You're full of crap. But I will say in John's case, he is completely consistent because I have seen him not just accept, but almost invite that.
Oh, I love it.
That sort of
adversity.
I don't
like to play the same character forever. And I don't like to play perfect characters either. So that has me dying a whole lot. It's in my profile page. You can read it at feartheboot.com.
Yeah, we need to update that. Not just...
Whoa. You need to update that. If I could code, I would be all over, but I got no skills.
Luke, the hut picture's not going away, though.
No, it's not.
I was going to say, one of my favorite things about moving to
Poopy
world...
Poopy Jedi!
Unta Bunta Solo!
One of the most enjoyable things about transitioning to WoW from EQ was the...
Nerd alert!
they got rid of some of those things that made the original EverQuest so painful.
Well, the EQ death penalty was just frustrating. It wasn't fun at all. No. And no one profited from that. There was no piracy. There was loss to the system.
Yeah, it was just, it was painful. And they streamlined some of that pain out. Now, you could definitely say that since there's less to risk, there's less to gain, you know, like on an emotional level from, you know, like, really, oh my God, I totally lived through that.
Yeah, I never have an emotional attachment to my characters on games or in MMOs. It just never really... occasionally in some video games, but in, like, MMOs, there's no emotional connection. Wait, I see people who cry. I've seen people cry.
For me, it's not...
Yeah, I've seen people cry when their characters die or they can't do a raid or something, and I've, like, too much. This is why I don't
play
MMOs.
You know, I have to say that there's that whole human quirk of... We love to invest in things, and you know, the more we invest, the more seriously we take it, no matter how trivial that investment is. And there have been a few times I've never cried over a character where I start to get upset over something, and I'm like, you know what? I need to put this down for a while. This is a damn game. This is just a freaking game. And if I'm getting angry over it, then in fact, that was when I quit World of Warcraft the first time. I was sitting downstairs talking on the phone. And I went upstairs. I think I've told the story on the podcast. And Carl's like, you were talking about World of Warcraft, weren't you? I'm like, how do you know? She's like, because I heard you yelling. And that was when I quit World of Warcraft, was, you know, because it's like, this has gone too far.
I cried in Final Fantasy VII when Yuffie stole my materia.
Oh, I didn't cry, man. I was all like, Juggernaut, oh, I'm going to beat her ass.
Well, I don't even know what you're talking about. I never got past him.
Really? Oh, that made me mad.
Oh, look, a pinwheel for weapon. I can go play Tomb Raider.
I kind of save Midgard. I'm done. I'm going to camp out here in the wilderness and live my life. That snake's big. I'm not going to go past.
Live peacefully.
Live peacefully.
You know what? As a world burns. Midgar Zolom without figuring out that you're supposed to run by with a chocobo. What? I was one dumb friggin' 11-year-old.
Oh, I tried to take it on intentionally just because one of my great neuroses, particularly in any kind of computer RPG, is I am an absolute completionist. I'm the type of guy...
Yeah, I've noticed that, trying to get you to start playing Dragon Realm. I don't have this item! Are you there?
I'm a neurotic completionist. I have to have everything. See, if I play an RPG and I like make it to disc 2 and it turns out there's something on disc 1 that is like a part of the item you need to make the ultimate weapon and you can't get it anywhere but disc 1, I'll start the game over.
See, I'm half of that. I'm a completionist about some things, especially something interesting. And say, like, I get to disc 2 of something and I miss something in disc 1 that was very important, I'm more likely just to quit the game and be like, oh, crap. Because I hate replaying stuff.
I'm with you on that.
I see everybody playing Mass Effect on my friends list and they're like 10th or 12th playthrough. Not just you, other people too.
How do you do that?
Yeah, I blow through the damn game I win.
I played through once and I know there's at least one completely opposite version I could play.
Well, when it's BioWare type stuff where there's a totally different plot track, that's another story.
Well,
I did every mission.
All right. You got to understand, though, part of the reason, and I'll speak as someone who has played through Mass Effect about 85 times, there are three different things I could get from a game. Story, and that would be a game like Shadow Hearts 2 or Xenosaga.
Call of Duty 4.
Where I can play the game, and you know what? It could honestly just be a movie, and I'd be just as happy. That the story is good enough that that alone compels me to keep playing. The fact that I don't even have to play in the game. I don't care. I'm just enjoying the story. The second thing is the gameplay. That's Call of Duty 4, Unreal Tournament, Chrome Hounds. The third thing that attracts me to a game is immersion. And this is mostly in online games because I feel like I'm a meaningful part of the world. I have a house. I have relationships. There's things that I do that affect the world. And part of the reason that I kept playing Mass Effect over and over and over was not because necessarily the game was that immersive all in and of itself, but because being a big sci-fi freak and the whole Danvers thing where here I am, I'm a guy on a capital ship in powered armor with a machine gun murdering aliens.
Playing Hunters Hunted in the back room.
I was lost in the immersion of the game because for me, this is like, at least for the near future, this is as close as I am ever going to get to seeing what I want to see up in a video game.
Well, see, one of the things I love about video games I don't get enough of, and one of the reasons I don't play MMOs very long, is I love exploration and being rewarded for it. And there's so few games where there's enough to explore, something unique to explore.
You need a porn game.
No, I don't want to explore. I've explored that. I'm married. Now we're done. The exploration. It's I've wrote the map. It's done. I've sent that into the National Service. We're cool.
Oh my God.
Wow.
It's still so hot.
You know, Kim and I hot. Facebook messaged the other day about STP.
I saw that actually.
Now I'm gonna just think about that when I look.
I know so you sold all your spelunking gear and.
Oh no! I still cave dive now and again.
You know, I took that someplace, and you guys took it to an entirely different place.
That was
place,
all
so.
Luke. Yeah.
I was just saying that I enjoy exploration in games, and there are very few games that reward that. If I could have an MMO that was so big and so broad where I could go and, say, map something and sell it for people, I would love to play an MMO where I was a cartographer, and I'd go out and be like,
Ultima
hey.
Online.
Yeah, there was cartography.
There was an entire skill cartography where you could make maps.
Too bad that game was boring.
Chest. It was not boring. Play in Felucca.
Felucca.
That's the PvP side of the servers.
I played in the other one. I can't think of what it was.
Trammel.
You know,
you were a trammy.
Because I don't really like being walking around as a level 10. I'm like, hey, I can kind of take care of myself. And all of a sudden, level 30
bang!
Guy comes along and, oh, you're my girlfriend.
Well, all right. Now, let me definitely stress that.
Bender by the
banks and we can
guards.
Go back to role-playing games with this as well. That there is a definite line between playing adversity and you have no chance, or what we have called the Richard Pryor game, where you spend the whole game running scared. It's like the difference between playing a guy.
I thought you were going to set yourself on fire somehow. Oh, yes, never mind.
Free basing? No. But it's not like you're playing the guy who has weaknesses, maybe even has a lot of weaknesses. You're playing the guy who cannot do anything.
The Charlie Brown game.
And that is moving from tabletops back to MMOs. You can also get that where you just get the gankathon. And
the game in which the MMO in which the spread of player power is just so
inflated,
so huge. And when you step outside of town, one guy can kill you.
You spend
and
your
100
whole,
copies of you.
You spend your whole game watching your back. Usually, and even then, it doesn't matter because the person sees you, you're dead anyway. So
it's one thing having to play smart, having to play cautious. But when you're just completely, completely outclassed.
No one's advocating that.
That's I guess that goes back to your whole game design thing. It's like when you're putting things in front of your characters,
right?
You know, you need manageable obstacles, not necessarily easy or, you know, a variety of difficulties, but occasionally you have the untiered counter that you're just not supposed to mess with.
And that's why typically getting back to tabletop role-playing games, when I do a system where you have to roll, I allow people to at least re-roll the bottom basement rolls. For example, when we're playing the fastest Star Trek game, you roll a lot of D10s. And I tell people, okay, if you roll a one or two, you can re-roll. You roll three, you're still stuck with it. But at least this way, you're not coming out as some just completely malformed, worthless individual. You might have weaknesses. You might have a lot of weaknesses, but you still have some ability to function. In D&D, you know, I might set that somewhere differently. I don't know. I might say something like, okay, you can re-roll anything that's not at least, let's say, a six or something. So
I've done 3d6 straight down the line, no assignment. And that can be fun depending on what you're doing. But generally,
short term, yes. Long term,
generally,
no.
4d6 drop the lowest is a good way to go.
Oh, I go one more than that. Typically, what I do lately is 4d6 drop the lowest seven times, drop the lowest roll. And that's
my head hurts now.
That's relatively generous, rather.
That's pretty generous.
I just write 18 in all the boxes.
You know what I love, though? I tell you, I've only played one campaign. Well, I actually GM'd one campaign like this that I love. Was everyone started not at first level, but this was second edition. They started at zero level, 3d6 straight down. This is what you were born as. Now figure out what you can be and convince someone to teach you. And if you didn't have a high enough score intelligence, didn't matter if you wanted to play the mage. Your character's a dumbass.
Yeah, you need 9 intelligence to even
Goodman
cast
Games
spell.
Had modules where you start at zero level. I have a few of those, actually. I love the Goodman Games stuff. The Dungeon Crawl Classics, good times.
I've had trouble getting anyone to agree to play a game like that ever since then.
I'll play it.
We're going to be zero level, bitch.
What did
I
told you I would play in your Forgotten Realms game. I would play in your Temple of Elemental Evil game. I'm
well,
rocking the
trick that requires showing up on a day of the week.
Well, and day of the week? No, weekend. That's when I can play.
As long as that's Sunday or Saturday evening.
Well, generally just Sunday.
As long as it's
except
that
Sunday's already taken
already
up.
Already game.
Yeah, that's really just Sunday,
look,
except Sunday's already taken
up. I get
up,
two
so.
Days a week where I can do stuff. One is podcasting, the other is gaming. The rest is couple time. We either go out
so
with
what
people,
you're saying is,
but parties.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. What he's saying is that he'd love to play in the game, and he's available any day of the week, except any day of the week.
No, I'm saying I'd love to play in it, run it on a Sunday when your GM turn comes up.
All
I mean.
Right.
Well, I think the trick is if you're going to do that zero level game, the players have to know it's going somewhere. Because just coming in and, I'm going to play up until the point where I'm halfway competent, and then we're done.
Well, that's
not much of a reward.
Absolutely, because gimmick games are just as dumb as gimmick characters. That if you have a character where, like, all he is, oh, I'm Knife Man, that's a crappy, crappy character. And it's games are this...
What if it was your Mega Man game?
Well, but
wasn't that a show on the WB?
I don't know.
But if you have a gimmick game where it's like, oh, yeah, the entire point of the game is that you're zero level and trying to find your way, unless you have a really good knack for running sandbox games, which I'll admit I don't. I can run open games where they're generally sandboxy, but there still has to be some boundaries to the sandbox, more narrow than what Luke would have. Then, yeah, that's a bad gimmick game. There has to be some underlying plot. It's just what you have about this is you don't know. I don't know for sure that I'm going to be the paladin in the plot. I might end up being the wizard in the plot, despite the fact that I wanted to be the paladin.
Let me go back to what
you
just
could
said
be the
too.
Wizard who wanted to be
my
a paladin.
My little 2-day-a-week thing before people go, oh, your wife's got you whipped when done. That's by my choice. I like to spend time with my wife. I like to hang out
Dude,
with
no
her.
One said
I'm
that.
Glad you invented that. Somebody's going to email me and go, your wife's got you whipped, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I like to spend time with my wife. That's why I make these limitations.
Some kind of an insecurity here?
I feel a little defensive coming from that chair.
Well, it is because I already
said
see
anything
the
like
emails
that.
And PMs. I get so much crap for your jokes about me not being a doctor, which... Newsflash, I am a doctor. I don't care what these people say. I have the certificate that I got on the internet. It says I'm a doctor. It's from Wikipedia.
I get
Did you also get your wife from the internet?
Yeah, how'd you actually did.
Yeah,
there's a whole bonus episode on that.
Oh yeah, I salute her.
She's from Russia too, oddly enough. How weird is that?
Man, according to those sites, those Russian chicks are hot, man. You go to like brides.ru or whatever.
Hey, I actually know a guy with a Russian wife and she's pretty awesome.
Dear.
Wasn't Tommy looking into doing that?
I don't know.
I don't know if he was seriously looking into doing that, but I think he definitely at least entertained the idea.
I won't mention his name because it's someone I'm fairly close to, but I do know someone who was...
I bet I know who it is.
It was joking, but serious.
But not, yeah.
So
I can tell who he is as soon as you cut the mic.
All right, then we'll cut the mic so I can find out if John is right. So thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.